working with the five hindrances, and mental and emotional pain.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Homage to the Blessed, Noble, and Perfectly Enlightened One. When one begins to practice meditation, the diversity of physical feelings that one learns to observe in the body can seem quite astonishing at first. And similarly, meditators can also be quite surprised to discover, after beginning to pay attention, just how busy their minds are. And surprised to discover too, that not only are our minds often full of thinking, they are also often experiencing a remarkable array of constantly changing feelings. In practicing mindfulness of feelings, we train in becoming mindful of both physical and mental feelings. Over time, with deepening awareness, one begins to notice more clearly just how many feelings mental and emotional phenomena give rise to in the complex experience of life. Sometimes pleasant, sometimes neutral, and oftentimes rather painful. In this talk, we will take a look at the habit of thinking a lot and consider ways to become more aware, moderate, and skillful in this important area. With regards to practicing with mental and emotional phenomena, while some meditators may have been surprised to discover just how emotional they actually are, other, more emotional types might have been aware of the existence of all of these feelings for quite some time already. In this talk, we will also explore ways to practice bringing genuine, mindful awareness into this sometimes wild and turbulent realm. As a general principle, in mindfulness meditation, it is best to aim to be primarily mindful of a type of neutral physical feeling, such as the in and out breathing, so as to have a fairly consistent anchor with which to practice generating and maintaining a clear quality of awareness. And yet it is also often the case that while trying to be mindful of the breathing, for example, other phenomena, often mental, are impinging significantly upon this awareness. There can be a sense of struggle in staying with the meditation object. This is quite normal, but the question might well arise, how does one practice with such things? Take, for example, the experience of thinking obsessively about something. On those occasions when the mind is recycling the same thoughts or reactions or opinions about something, and simply won't let them go. If we take ourselves off to sit on our meditation cushion at these times and try to practice mindfulness of breathing, we will probably find that the heart area feels hot and cramped and somewhat oppressed. So how should we address the habit of excessive thinking and the suffering which it generates? Likewise, if there is sadness or grief present in the mind, becoming mindful of the feelings of these emotions, the area of the heart can feel rather swollen or heavy and aching. Or suppose we are happy and excited about a promising plan for the future and keep rehearsing and rehashing our plan again and again in our minds. We can really make ourselves quite dizzy. On a feeling level, there might be heat and spinning sensations in the area of the head, and the excited heart will probably be thumping a little harder than normal in our chest. And so it is precisely because the powerful phenomena of our emotional and thinking habits can be quite deluding, self-perpetuating, and also significantly painful, that in the course of developing the skills of meditation, practitioners must necessarily learn skillful ways to pacify the habit of obsessive thinking, and learn also how to bring the emotional world into a more moderated state of harmony and equilibrium. So how do we do this? Fortunately, if cultivated sincerely enough, a lot can be achieved with mindfulness of breathing alone. When we train ourselves consistently to pull back from thoughts and keep encouraging mindfulness to rest upon the awareness of the in and out breath, it is usually the case that the excessive thinking mind will eventually calm down. And as for working with strong emotions and feelings, once again, the breath can be utilized to assist in calming and pacifying the heart. We will come back to this important component of meditation practice a little later in this talk. Of course, gaining these kinds of good results from anapanasati, or breath meditation, does require a sincere and disciplined commitment to the practice. But first of all, before exploring the practice of meditation any further, it is important and can be very helpful for meditators to understand that as a general principle, when there is a lot of discursive thinking occurring in the mind, at such times the quality of one's mindfulness is quite weak. This information can come as a surprise to many people because our intelligence can be so convincing. We can delude ourselves into believing that when we are thinking a lot, we are doing it with mindfulness. Many contemporary meditators have a real challenge here. And so it is very important to understand that mindfulness by itself does not conceive of selves and others. Nor does mindfulness think about the past or plan for the future, and mindfulness does not express feelings either. All of these types of activities fall into the realm of what might more correctly be called mental proliferation. And excessive mental proliferation actually has the direct effect of weakening this quality of mindfulness. Understanding this simple point helps us to understand why it is that we find it difficult to be mindful of our breathing while we are thinking a lot, or just after a period when we have been thinking a lot. Certainly one can think in a focused way with wisdom, and one can also bring some mindfulness to keep an eye on one's thinking, ensuring that it stays within skillful boundaries. One can also be mindful of the occasional thought or string of thoughts popping up without making a problem out of it. But generally speaking, if we are thinking a lot in a scattered, restless or obsessive sort of way, it is good to be honest about the fact that mindfulness is weak at such times, and that the mind is absorbed in thinking. Right mindfulness is aware of phenomena as phenomena, with a quality of clarity and objectivity. It sees a thought as simply a thought, a feeling as simply a feeling, and it is aware of these things as they are experienced in the mind and body in the present moment. When mindfulness is strong, although there might be any number of physical and mental feelings to be aware of in the moment, there would not be much of a story or much of a sense of self present in one's experience. I don't mean to criticize the act of thinking here per se, or infer that people should not have a sense of self within experience. Of course it is necessary to think and to plan and to remember to some degree. And until we have had direct and powerful insights into not-self, the sense of being a self will quite naturally be present a lot of the time. But for most of us, the thinking habit has got a little bit out of hand, to the point where thinking does not so much relieve us of stress as we might hope, but rather adds an additional and unnecessary element of stress to our lives. And so as meditators who are interested in developing peacefulness and learning how to think more skillfully, moderately, and wisely, we need to take a courageous look at our habits of thinking and learn ways to restrain, challenge, pacify, and develop these habits skillfully. In learning to develop peacefulness and wisdom through meditation, we all need to become skilled in recognizing thoughts as simply being thoughts, with mindfulness. and to recognize with mindfulness as well feelings, whether physical or mental, as simply being feelings. The reason that we need to train in this way is because when we are able to bring sharp mindfulness to bear on the phenomena of thoughts and feelings objectively, the mind is then able to separate from them to some degree, instead of becoming absorbed. When the mind can separate from thoughts and feelings, it is able to find a calm center in which to rest. Or perhaps it is more the case that when the mind can separate from its mental objects, they can then simply fall away from the mind, leaving some space for natural awareness to abide. As the mind abides resting in this center, the quality of mindfulness becomes more energized and sharp. If one then trains this awareness to abide with a wholesome meditation object, one can then experience the mind becoming more and more collected and peaceful. Within this process, thought activity naturally becomes pacified. In this way, mindfulness and clear comprehension work in conjunction with right collectedness, or right concentration, to let go of the activity of unnecessary proliferation and to establish a deep and natural sense of clarity and well-being in the mind. Learning to separate the mind from thoughts and feelings is not an easy task, because these things tend to flood the mind, to fill it up and overwhelm it, and to delude us, as it were. And this is the way things have been for a very long time. By employing a useful metaphor, Venerable Ajahn Chah, the famous Thai forest tradition meditation master, explained, "It is as though there is a chair in the center of the mind, and there are many different guests coming into the mind and sitting on the chair. Some of these visitors are wholesome, but many of them are not." Lompo Cha expounded upon this metaphor further by explaining that as meditators, we need to learn to sit consistently in this chair, the center of conscious experience, with mindfulness and wisdom, keeping a watchful eye on who, or rather what, is coming into the mind, and not just allowing the mind to become deluded or overwhelmed by the various emotions or mind states which appear and arise there. During formal meditation, and during other quiet moments when it is possible to do so, we must practice pulling back from the activity of mental proliferation, so as to sharpen the quality of mindfulness and clarity in relation to the present moment experience of life, and so as to maintain the sense of having a calm center within experience, being able to observe our lives with some wisdom and objectivity. This actually gives us a lot more freedom and empowers us to make better choices. For people who do think a lot, the good news is that after spending some time developing mindful awareness, the habit of mindfulness can become very powerful. Experienced meditators learn how to engage thinking when they need to, and learn how to put it down when it is unnecessary. Or at the very least, we can learn how to know that there is a lot of thinking going on, without getting completely lost in it. Why do we think so much? Since it is such a common experience for many modern meditators, let us look at this habit of thinking. How many times have you come to your cushion seeking some peacefulness and found that the thinking mind would simply not allow mindfulness to rest with the breath? Probably quite a few times. Have you ever wondered at these times if there might be something you could do to bring things more into balance? I'm sure you have. Fortunately, there are various skillful means that we can utilize to develop more skills, strength, and power here. But before we look at some of the remedies for the habit of excessive thinking, it might be helpful to recognize the way we feed, encourage, and perpetuate this habit. Most modern people think a lot, and talk a lot, and read a lot, and view a lot of media which involves listening to the verbalized thoughts of many, many others. And so given that we spend so much time generating and articulating our thoughts, as well as reading and listening to the written and verbalized thoughts of others, it is not really so surprising that our heads are full of thoughts. If you compared a current-day city dweller's mind to the mind of a traditional farmer or potter, for example, you would probably be astounded to see just how much more thinking goes on in modern people's heads than went on in the heads of generations which came before. If we understand how much we feed the thinking process, it should not then seem so surprising to find that we cannot simply turn it off at will. Something which we can do, however, is learn how to direct the thinking mind onto a skillful, pacifying object and keep it there for some time until it inclines towards more calm. In traditional Buddhist Asia, the practice of chanting and reciting suttas became a central aspect of spiritual discipline, and for very good reason. When we engage our thinking and articulating habit to recite auspicious verses and teachings in a rhythmic and somewhat monotonous manner, the thinking mind is being placed onto a skillful object for a period of time, in a way that inclines the mind towards peace. It is the experience of many meditators that the mind becomes much more peaceful, much more easily, after a half an hour of chanting. This practice often seems too alien or ritualistic for many contemporary meditators, but the fact that it is very effective should not be overlooked. If you feel uncomfortable or shy about chanting out loud alone, another similarly effective practice is the practice of reciting some mantras for a period of time before turning to observe the natural breath. One simply uses a traditional rosary of 108 beads and starts reciting quietly a mantra such as Buddhang Saranang Gacchami on the first bead, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami on the second bead, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami on the third bead, until you have done one round. Several rounds might be helpful if the mind is really scattered or busy. Recollecting the three jewels of refuge and taking refuge before meditation is an excellent way to prime the mind. Itipiso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho is another very good mantra to recollect quietly with prayer beads before meditation. Homage to the Samma Sambuddha, perfectly enlightened. Meditators can choose a mantra which is inspiring, uplifting, or relevant to their own practice, and take up the practice of recollecting and reciting this mantra at the beginning of each sit, so as to establish a little more of a sense of being present and collected before turning inwards. Another practice which helps to subdue both obsessive thinking and strong emotional reactions is the practice of walking meditation. For many people, it might not be very realistic to sit down at the end of a busy day and expect the mind to rest with the subtle object of the natural breath. At such times, the mind will usually be either tired or absorbed in distracted or discursive thought. It is generally a little easier to be mindful of the physical feelings of the feet touching the ground or the floor while walking up and down along a quiet path or hallway than it is to be mindful of the breath. Walking swiftly yet mindfully up and down a walking path, mentally reciting a skillful recollection such as put do, put do, put do, in conjunction with the footsteps, is a very effective way to begin to calm the mind and generate more of the quality of mindfulness needed for skillful meditation. When we deliberately yet gently place our mind on another more neutral object with mindfulness and keep it there for some time, thinking usually does slow down quite naturally, all by itself. In fact, the mind often becomes very peaceful while practicing walking meditation alone. If one cultivates this practice sincerely enough, it is possible for some people to become more peaceful while doing walking meditation than sitting meditation. This practice is, of course, a central component to the meditation disciplines of forest monks and nuns in Thailand. Once again, it is the experience of many meditators that the mind will generally become more peaceful, more easily, in a session of sitting meditation after a half an hour or so of walking meditation. Once again, I am aware that many people can find this activity alien, or not quite as promising and alluring as the formal sitting posture. People often have resistance to the idea of pacing up and down. But the simple fact is that many people do feel quite peaceful after practicing mindfully pacing up and down for a period of 20 minutes or so. To understand the principle of why it is a good idea to do some walking meditation before sitting meditation, simply consider this progression. One starts with a more coarse meditation object first, generating a clear and consistent quality of body-based awareness, practicing mindfulness of walking, before turning to be mindful of a more subtle meditation object, such as the breath. It is interesting to note that the grounded and present quality of collected awareness that can be generated through walking meditation is precisely the type of peacefulness that many meditators are hoping to give rise to in the often unfocused session of sitting meditation. Of course, another skillful way to wrestle with the thinking habit is to skillfully engage the process of thinking within the meditation itself. We can learn to practice noting our thoughts or labeling them so as to establish some detachment and objectivity as a tool to help us to let them go. Many experienced meditators have seen the benefits of using mental noting as a means for establishing a little more space or objectivity in the mind. Returning to the simile of the chair, mental noting can be a way of acknowledging what is actually present in the mind and of ascertaining whether it is skillful or unskillful, wholesome or unwholesome, necessary or unnecessary. When we practice seeing what is present in the mind and practice knowing it according to its characteristics, the qualities of mindfulness and clear comprehension are being established, and we are taking our place on the metaphorical seat in the center of a more peaceful mind. Before talking more specifically about ways of recognizing and noting thoughts, hindrances, and mind states, it is important to talk about attitude and intention first. When we train in using mental noting, we are not trying to repress, annihilate, or obliterate mental phenomena, nor are we trying to push mental phenomena aside quickly in order to get some peacefulness. It is important not to allow various types of aversion or greed to affect this practice, subsequently degenerating its effectiveness. And so in utilizing any type of mental noting practice, we must consistently recollect that we are trying to bring qualities of patience and a cool quality of clear knowing into our experience, not any further forms of unskillfulness. Whenever there is a lot of thinking in the mind, sometimes noting the simple word, thinking, can be enough to help us to drop the thought and gently return to the breath. At other times, we might need to be somewhat more determined to pull away, noting with more detail, or micro-labeling, as it is sometimes called. Some examples might be thinking about the future, thinking about the past, thinking about another person, thinking about another place, or greedy thoughts, angry thoughts, sexual thoughts, critical thoughts, etc. At other times, practicing recognizing whether thoughts are wholesome or unwholesome, skillful or obstructive, can also be quite helpful. To assist us all in learning how to develop and maintain a balanced and peaceful mind, the Lord Buddha offered many wonderful teachings and instructions. With perfected mindfulness and wisdom, the Buddha was able to see all phenomena clearly as they really are, and from this wonderfully clear vantage point, he was able to elucidate many pertinent lists of dhammas which can be contemplated, investigated, and utilized in various different ways. One of the most simple and practical lists of dhammas to train in recollecting is the list which describes the five main hindrances to peacefulness. The Buddha said that these qualities or habits were like robbers or bandits invading the mind, stealing away energy and the possibility of being peaceful. Once we can recognize a hindrance as a hindrance, it is generally a little easier to abandon it. So what are the five hindrances? The first one is sensual craving. This means all of those things, big or little, that we desire or want. So whenever the mind is affected by thoughts related to longing, craving, subtle or intense desire, one can try to establish a little more objectivity and mindfulness in the mind by noting the hindrance of sensual desire. The second hindrance is aversion and ill will. So here, any angry or aversive thoughts towards either objects or people or situations or any phenomena at all can simply be noted as the hindrance of aversion. The third hindrance is sloth and torpor, sleepiness, tiredness, dullness, fuzziness. We will talk a little later about how to practice with dullness and tiredness, but as an aid to help recognize the quality of our thoughts, we can note thoughts like, I want to go back to bed, I'm tired, it would be better to sleep, etc., as the hindrance of sloth and torpor. The fourth hindrance is restlessness and worry. When the mind is very busy and agitated, it is often this hindrance which is most prominent. Remorse, dis-ease, agitation, confused worrying, obsessive thinking can all be noted as the hindrance of restlessness and worry. The final hindrance is doubt. This can be doubt about the meditation practice, doubt about our abilities, doubt about the Buddha's enlightenment, doubt about the teacher, or whatever. It is very important to learn to recognize doubt as doubt, because this quality can undermine our confidence and capacity to focus in meditation. So try to note and label doubting thoughts as the hindrance of doubt, and try to develop an unwavering confidence in the value of meditation. Many meditators will discover that sometimes there are several hindrances present in the mind. These types of lists can be very helpful in generating some more clarity, but naturally, experience does not always fall into neat and clear-cut categories. Even so, it is still possible to note several hindrances, such as the hindrances of restlessness and worry and aversion, or sleepiness and desire, etc. It is good to feel confident that learning to recognize mental phenomena more clearly is a valuable skill to develop in and of itself. So even if one finds that the hindrances do not always drop away after noting them, and after having made a concerted effort to pull away from them, at the very least, in seeing and recognizing these hindrances more clearly, one is establishing a little more mindfulness and clear comprehension in the mind than would have otherwise been there. It is the experience of many meditators that although sometimes it seems as though there is no space in the mind from thoughts at all, after spending a session observing these thoughts with a little more awareness and wisdom, once the session is over, one generally feels much more peaceful and clear than before the meditation began. With the intention of encouraging your own efforts, it is important to recognize the benefits of the practice outside of the time of the actual meditation session. So even if you do still think a lot during the meditation sometimes, make a point to notice how you feel a few minutes after the session is over. Most of the time you will definitely be experiencing more clarity, well-being and peacefulness than before. It is important to notice this. With regards to practicing with intense dullness or sleepiness, sometimes overcoming sleepiness can simply be a matter of meditating somewhere where it is bright and light, or of turning the lights on in the room where you meditate, rather than off, because light helps to dispel drowsiness from the mind. Getting up and splashing some cool water on the face and then returning to meditate can also be quite effective. But of course, one of the main reasons that many modern people feel tired when they come to meditate is actually because the mind has been overstimulated and is genuinely a little worn out. If you have a big challenge in this area, it can be helpful to do some exercise, some yoga or tai chi, or to take an invigorating cool shower before the meditation session, in order to both relax and revitalize the system. Other people find that meditating in the morning, after having rested, gives better results than trying to meditate after a busy day. You could try sleeping earlier and getting up earlier to meditate and see if this helps. Generally speaking, the more people meditate, the stronger the quality of mindfulness will become, and the mind will develop a sincere and eager interest in experiencing peacefulness after it has become accustomed to it. Once this has been established, dullness, boredom and sleepiness become much less of a problem. But as an always relevant basic principle, for people interested in developing true peacefulness, it is important to try to cut back on excessive stimulation and distraction throughout the day, because these kinds of activities do take a lot of energy from the mind. Look at your lifestyle and habits and see if there are ways that you can learn to be a little more careful and restrained, keeping a little more or a lot more energy inside, so that when you come to meditate, you have some resources to tap into. So having talked a little about practicing with thinking and also with drowsiness and dullness, let us move into a different realm of phenomena now, the realm of emotions and mental feelings. Once people have meditated for some time, they will usually find that their minds seem more sensitive and aware than before. This heightened sensitivity brings both advantages and challenges. Being more sensitive and aware can be very helpful for heightening the capacity to recognize the nature of our mind states more quickly. It can help us to be aware of how things and situations affect the mind, subsequently assisting in the process of learning how to protect the wholesome and avoid and abandon the unwholesome in all areas of our life. But extra sensitivity also frequently brings a heightened awareness of suffering and pain as well. And because of this, it is important for meditators to learn ways to relate and respond to the experience of having heightened awareness and more acute sensitivity. So far, we have been exploring at length the habit of excessive thinking. For people who have meditated for some time and who have had some experience of peacefulness, you will probably notice that thinking a lot is actually quite painful. Similarly, sometimes during meditation, once we have been able to calm the thinking mind, we can notice that the heart feels rather sore or bruised, as though all of the preceding thinking and busyness was causing pain in the heart. Even after the thinking ceases, a residue of pain remains. Experiences like this can help us to see that thinking and mental feelings are not actually as separate as we might habitually assume. For some people, it is frequently the case that once thoughts drop away and the awareness of the breath becomes more prominent, the next most prominent sensation in awareness is the sensation of pain in the area of the heart, as though these painful feelings were already there just below the surface. Yet until the mind became a little more peaceful, it was difficult to be aware of them. These kinds of mental feelings can pulsate and throb, become sharp and piercing, grow bigger, grow smaller, change, move around, and fade away, arising in the area of the chest or solar plexus and moving around throughout the entire chest, stomach, and abdomen areas. Not everyone is very sensitive or aware in this area, but quite a few people are. Generally speaking, with regards to mental feelings, when there is some mindfulness and wisdom and a somewhat collected quality present, the feelings in the mind will be predominantly pleasant and neutral. Alternatively, however, whenever any one of the five hindrances, or any unwholesome mind state for that matter, is affecting the mind significantly, unpleasant mental feelings will definitely be there. Whether beings actually notice this or not will depend upon their level of sensitivity and awareness. It is not entirely necessary to become aware of these feelings. I simply mention this phenomena here for the sake of encouraging those people who are aware in this area to learn how to practice with such things. It may be interesting for some people to hear that one or several of the five hindrances can definitely be present in the mind to some degree, even if they are not appearing or manifesting in the form of thoughts. This goes some way in helping to explain why there can be unpleasant feelings arising in the heart, even when thinking seems to have been significantly subdued. It is understood that if one can maintain very clear mindfulness upon the breathing at times when unpleasant mental feelings are present, as mindfulness becomes stronger and the mind becomes more centered and collected, the hindrances which are present will gradually subside and eventually simply drop away. For people with very strong concentration or samadhi, these hindrances and the painful feelings which arise in conjunction with them can drop away very quickly. But occasionally, or sometimes frequently, depending on your mind, it isn't always possible to go past these unpleasant mental feelings in meditation, and so at such times we must learn to abide with them as skillfully and patiently and with as much wisdom as possible. It can also be the case at times that while a meditator's mind is becoming quite peaceful, all of a sudden, apparently without any rhyme or reason, a big ball of painful feelings can arise in the area of the heart. This kind of experience can lead to some confusion, especially if this occurs when there is no thinking, or very little thinking present in the mind. One might well start wondering, I'm not thinking about or doing anything unskillful, and nothing seems to have occurred to have stimulated a painful reaction, so why is there all of this pain? Another interesting angle to consider to help us in understanding where some of this mysterious pain in the heart might be arising from is the possibility that previously generated unwholesome karma may ripen in the heart as unpleasant feelings. Ajahn Chah mentions in some of his talks that past karmic habits certainly do swell up in the mind, bringing a lot of unpleasant feelings along with them. And he explains that at such times, the best remedy to be applied is determination and patient forbearance. If this sounds familiar to you, or if working with this kind of phenomena is necessarily a large part of your practice, it might be helpful to know that what you are experiencing is not that uncommon. The Buddha explained that one of the main characteristics of all conditioned experience was suffering and unsatisfactoriness. Once they have begun a regular meditation practice, people with very sensitive minds soon begin to notice that the Lord Buddha really knew what he was talking about. In seeing mental suffering more clearly and more frequently, it is important not to develop aversion or resistance to meditation, not wanting to experience the ripening of karma as unpleasant mental feelings. Keep in mind that it is just as much the case that previously or recently generated skillful karma can and does ripen during meditation sessions as pleasure, serenity, well-being, happiness and contentment. And it is understood that even the actual act of meditating produces a lot of good karma that will ripen in the future in a pleasant or fortuitous way. Most human beings are experiencing one of the five hindrances most of the time that they are alive. And most human beings do not actually investigate this experience very much at all. For people who are unaware or unfamiliar with peacefulness, they will probably hardly even notice just how much pain is in their minds. Rather, they will try to entertain, distract, and intoxicate themselves, or blame others for their pain, before trying to forget themselves in sleep. In moving away from this state of unawareness and reactivity, it is in fact necessary to become more conscious of the noble truth of suffering and the path leading away from it. It is important to maintain a healthy perspective, understanding that even though meditation can make one more aware of or sensitive to mental suffering, meditation also plays an enormously powerful and important role in reducing the amount of suffering that can be experienced by a being. Furthermore, it lays many of the causes for the arising of future well-being, and ultimately will play a vital role in liberating one from suffering altogether. Generally speaking, men seem to be a little less heart-based than women, although there are always plenty of exceptions on both sides. This does not mean that there is less pain in the hearts of unenlightened men than there is in the hearts of unenlightened women. It just means that for whatever reason, men will probably be a little less sensitive or aware of this pain than women are. But whether you are a man or a woman is not important, and whether you are aware of all of this mental and emotional pain or not is also not so important. But for those people who do have very sensitive minds, one very important question might be, how should I work with all of this pain? Good question. In more than 10 years practicing as a monk in a large international community, I have hardly ever heard my predominantly male teachers talk about painful feelings in the heart and how to practice with this phenomena. There are instructions to be patient in general and encouragements to respond to suffering with loving kindness, both one's own suffering as well as the suffering of others. But instructions with regards to practicing with emotions rarely gets more specific than this. Although I am sure that all of us have to practice with painful mental feelings at times, perhaps it simply is the case that men don't talk about these things very much. One day, however, a laywoman friend of mine gave me a copy of a talk by the Vajrayana nun, Pema Chodron, which did seem to address the subject of practicing with mental pain a little more directly. After listening to this talk, it became apparent that my sister, Pema Chodron, is also no stranger to the experience of patiently bearing with painful feelings present in the heart. Some of her advice seemed very insightful and practical. While talking about how to practice with these feelings in conjunction with breath meditation, Venerable Pema Chodron used a word which seemed to adequately describe a suitable and appropriate mindful response. The word she used was the adjective to ventilate. To ventilate these feelings, which we might call pain in the heart, with the in and out breath. We will come back to this helpful concept a little while later. But first of all, before talking about how to meditate with the unpleasant feelings which arise in the heart any further, it is very important in mindfulness meditation to try to be predominantly aware of the feelings involved in the in and out breathing. At least this is what my own teacher, Arjuna Nun, a disciple of Ajahn Chah, explained to me. Especially if you are a very sensitive or emotional person, because maintaining this awareness gives the mind an anchor or a center, or at least a consistent and fairly neutral point of reference to help one to maintain some mindfulness. Breath meditation is the necessary central pillar which supports the practice of holding mental feelings within mindful awareness. Emotional feelings are complex and potent things. They can stimulate a lot of further reactivity and proliferation if not contained and held with mindfulness. If meditators try to observe this phenomena without some clarity or integrity of mindfulness already established, it is very likely that the mind will go off on a tangent, rehashing some old story, feeling sorry for itself, or fretting about the future. So it is important not to be too keen to delve into the feelings in the heart right at the beginning of the meditation session. I know that for some people, at least some of the time, as soon as the eyes are closed, the feelings in the heart seem more prominent than the feelings involved with the breath. For others, this might only be the case during particularly emotionally trying times. But in such a case, whether frequent or rarely occurring, what should one do? If the heart is full of strong feelings when you come to meditate, I would recommend simply trying to ignore these emotional feelings for the first 10 or 15 minutes of the meditation session, being very determined to be aware of the in and out breath, counting the breaths if this helps. Only after this, after 10 or 15 minutes of a concerted effort establishing some body-based mindfulness, would it then be appropriate to relax the effort somewhat and begin relaxing and expanding awareness to include the feelings in the heart. By doing this, one is not suppressing the emotions per se. One is simply not giving them all of the attention at the beginning of the meditation session. Often, while practicing breath meditation, for many people, as the mind begins to gather and collect after some time, there can be a sense that the mind is becoming somewhat settled or centered in the area of the heart. But when the heart is swollen with strong mental or emotional feelings, this settled center of awareness is difficult to establish. It is, however, possible at such times to hold these feelings in the heart within a broader or larger field of awareness. For example, one brings or allows awareness to settle within the entire upper body area, not pushing to make things more collected, but rather allowing the mind to settle in the larger space immediately surrounding the strong or unpleasant feelings, maintaining an attitude of patience and contentment with this degree of collectedness. Although there may still be a lot of unpleasant or painful feelings present in the heart, if one can establish some coolness and stillness around the experience, the mind will generally become more upright and wholesome after some time. It is also frequently the case that during the meditation session, after some time, the strong feelings in the heart can begin to dissolve and dissipate, or at least move around and change to some degree. Whenever this occurs, the meditator actually has an excellent opportunity to contemplate the impermanent and not-self nature of such feelings. For although peacefulness is very pleasant and can be a wonderful support to mindful investigations, developing wisdom and insight is also very valuable and important. So one needn't think that experiencing a lot of pain in the heart is wasting one's time or slowing down one's progress. If, over time, one can learn to utilize a partially collected mind in order to investigate the changing and not-self nature of such mental feelings, a lot of valuable growth in wisdom and insight can occur. It is also possible, and in fact highly recommended, to try to utilize the natural breath to help to soothe and dissolve painful feelings in the heart, or at least to soften the perception of such feelings as being solid and unchanging. I think that this is what Pema Chodron meant when she encouraged meditators to ventilate the various forms of clinging that can manifest as painful feelings in the sensitive space of the heart. One does this by trying to breathe through and around the feelings, as it were, allowing the energy of the breath to flow through the feelings in the heart, to whatever degree this is possible, not with aggression or excessive determination, but rather with an attitude of tender kindness and patience, working with the ordinary, natural breath, without wallowing in the feeling or falling into a story about it. One simply breathes through and around it with an impartial quality of patience and tender goodwill, or metta. Often, these strong feelings can dissolve after practicing in this way, but even if they do not, at the very least, a skillful attitude and a lot of wholesome energy have been brought to the ordinary and common human experience of pain and suffering. And naturally, training in this way will definitely have positive effects in other areas of one's life over time. Of course, to be able to breathe through and around strong emotional feelings does require some skill in maintaining mindful awareness of the breathing. And so hopefully, all of you will have enough fairly peaceful meditations where it is possible to make the breath the main focus, so that when the more challenging times come, one has been able to train in staying with the awareness of the breath in a fairly consistent manner. And so this brings us to the close of our exploration of some of the challenges one can experience with regards to working with mental and emotional phenomena in meditation. Hopefully some of what I have shared here has been informative and useful to some of you. Of course, one of the best ways to learn how to overcome challenges in this area is simply by meditating a lot. Over time, with experience, most meditators learn many skills regarding how to practice with their own particular mind and its habits. And so I would like to heartily encourage each and every one of you to meditate a lot. Try to maintain a daily practice, because this will bring the best results over time. I wish you every success and much happiness. Be well.